good morning and welcome to Monday morning. I hope you had a great weekend. It was a busy weekend, lots of stuff going on. At Big Saskatchewan Marathon in Saskatoon, did you happen to drive by? Maybe you were impacted by the rerouting of traffic in a few areas. 6,000 runners in this marathon. It's a qualifier, of course, for the Boston Marathon. At Regina, blocked off 13th Avenue for the Cathedral Village Arts Festival. They were up, I think, 100 vendors this year. So 400 vendors, thousands of people there. So it was a busy weekend. Farmers finishing up seeding. And sadly, fires continued to be a problem in the north part of the province. I know the Saskatchewan Public Safety Agency on the weekend confirmed 23 camping units and one trapper's cabin lost in the Shoe Fire, 4 cabins lost in the Camp Fire, and 1 cabin lost in the Pissu Fire. So continuing to follow along with that and hope that they get a bit of a break and they can get a control on those fires. Well, we've got a full show today, lots of different things to talk about. Roundtable of Justice. Well, we're wrapping up Mental Health Month, the month of May. We've got 3 professionals talking about the reality of mental wellness along those that are keeping us safe. That's today on the Roundtable of Justice. Some pushback on a recent piece of legislation in Saskatchewan. We'll talk about the importance of foot care in your overall health care with a Saskatchewan business owner who just celebrated 65 years in the business. A well-known Saskatoon mayor wrote a book. Don Acheson joins us. We'll let you know who won Green and White Prognostications just after 9. Full show. Let's get going.
Coffee drinker, huh?
Maybe we could grab some coffee?
I'd love a fresh cup of coffee.
Here, drink this cup.
Coffee.
Step into the Evan Bray Cafe. This is Monday Morning Coffee.
Well, a few weeks ago, I was at an event in Saskatoon. It was raising money and awareness for the Saskatoon Public Schools Foundation, which does a ton of great work in Saskatoon. They had a couple of very incredible guest speakers there, both of them great. And I thought, you know what? I approached both of them, said, we got to get you on this show sometime. And so today I'm excited to have a guest that has been a strong leader in this province in a variety of ways, but particularly on the potash front, Mr. Wayne Brownlee, a former executive vice president and CFO of Nutrien. Before that, executive vice president and CFO for Potash Corp. He's been in the potash industry for a number of years. Great leader that gives back to his community and province in so many ways. I'm so happy to have Mr. Wayne Brownlee with me for Monday Morning Coffee this morning. Wayne, thanks for being here.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Evan.
Great weekend this weekend. Finally, we're getting a glimpse of hopefully some summer. How was the weekend for you?
Well, the weekend was good. It was a taste. It would be nice if we can get rid of the wind, but I think the forecast for this week looks great, so I'm very optimistic about it. And well, it's nice to see everything turn green.
Yeah, for sure it is. I mentioned in my introduction of you that I got to work with you on that Saskatoon Public Schools Foundation event, and I thought it was an incredible night. Your story is incredible. You're born and raised in Saskatchewan, proudly from Bigger Saskatchewan. What were your dreams growing up? You ended up being an incredible leader in the potash industry, but I'm sure that wasn't in your mind going to elementary school in Bigger Saskatchewan.
Yeah, well, a long time ago and before the internet, at least my view, and maybe it was pretty parochial, but my sense of what the career options were with teacher, lawyer, doctor, nurse, you know, whatever it was, they were pretty standard. And so my initial ambition was to be a doctor, but that changed as I hit university and found out that my attention to detail was not as good as it needed to be a doctor. I ended up taking an MBA at the University of Saskatchewan, and that got me into the government, and that got me into business.
Mm-hmm. So where did your affinity for potash come in? You worked for the provincial government for a number of years. Was that your introduction to potash?
Yeah, so I worked, I was with the Department of Energy and Mines for 3 years, and one of my key responsibilities was potash taxes as well as mineral taxes, but So I negotiated tax reform with the industry, including Chuck Childers, who was then with Mosaic, or IMC back then. And, of course, he became CEO of Potash Corp. And the other thing was the Minister of Energy and Mines at that time was Paul Schnalls, who ended up being the chairman of Potash Corp. And so I spent some time. I took a year off on a leave program, and with different investment banks in Toronto and New York and London. And I came back and talked with Paul and then with Chuck. And so I was invited into Potash Corp to coordinate the privatization process.
Well, I want to talk about that. Wayne Brownlee is my guest this morning. So you played a lead role in Potash Corp being privatized. The province made the decision to do it. As we sit here in 2025, you reflect back on that. Was privatizing the corporation the right thing to do, and why, Wayne?
Well, I think it was, and I know there's a lot of different views on this. In fact, I've had an ongoing debate with Eric Klein, former Minister of Finance, about this. But there was a big difference in terms of what the government intended to do than what the management team under Chuck Childers wanted to do. And that was, there was a principle of price over volume, and it got Potash Corp through some very tricky times versus what the government wanted to do, which was operate full out and flood the market with potash. And we weren't in a position to do that as an industry. And two things sort of happened at that point in time. One is that about a week after the privatization process was completed in November of 89, the former Soviet Union collapsed. You recall the Berlin Wall falling down, and so Russia fell apart. Well, the thing with Russia and the former Soviet Union, they were consuming 13 million tons of potash, which was about 35% of the total industry worldwide. And with the fall of that and the fall of government control of farms, that consumption dropped from 13 million tons to 300,000 tons wow. in 5 years. And all those 13 million tons basically went into the offshore market and competed against Saskatchewan. And there was just no way we could have a lower cost of production than what the Russians had. I mean, our wages were easily 10 to 20 times higher than what they pay in Russia. So it was a pretty tough environment. And at the same time, the other thing that was happening then, as you recall, the NDP government got back into power, and there was no money left in the kitty. I mean, the province was very close to bankrupt. They wouldn't have had money to put into Potash Corp in terms of expansions and development and transactions. Mm-hmm. In fact, they would have been more likely to take as much money out as they could have, given their economic situation. So I think the vision that we had at Potash Corp led to a very strong Potash Corp over some very difficult terrain in those first 5 years.
Wayne, I'm curious, chatting with Wayne Brownlee this morning. You mentioned Russia. Russia and Belarus, really the main competitors when it comes to potash on the world stage. You talk about the difference in wages, for example, between people working in the potash industry here versus over in Russia. What is it that allows us to stay competitive in the potash market, knowing that we're up against some of those labor disparities?
Well, for one thing, our ore zones are very continuous. And, you know, with the technology that we put in there over a long period of time, the cost of production in Saskatchewan was actually quite cheap, even though our manpower costs are 10 to 20 times higher than it is almost anywhere else. Our freight costs, so there's three things that drive your competitiveness in potash. One is your cost of production. The second one is your freight costs to port facilities and to your customers in the offshore market. And the third is taxes. So in Saskatchewan, we had very low costs, and it was competitive against the Russians and the Belarusians. Our freight costs were more or less the same, depending on whether you're going to Brazil or India or China. But the tax levy in Saskatchewan was much more onerous than it was. And so we were only good in one of the three in terms of competitiveness. And that made the big difference.
I talk often on the show about how regulation, and certainly we're seeing it in the energy world today, how federally and provincially regulation infrastructure can play a huge role. Is there room for better infrastructure specific to the potash industry?
Yeah, I mean, we're quite limited in potash in Saskatchewan, and we either ship through Vancouver to the port, and there's actually one bridge that holds it all together, because you got to go across that bridge to get to the port facility. So you don't have a lot of optionality there. You can go to Portland in the United States, and you can go east, but going east through the Great Lakes, you can ship, or you can go by rail all the way to New Brunswick port. Or in the U.S. domestic market, of course, you can ship south on railway. But right. All of those things are fairly expensive. I mean, we're landlocked And so it's one of our biggest costs now is just getting the potash to the customer. And it's hard to find a way. I know they investigated at one time whether or not they could put potash into a solution and pipeline it to various places, but that was not an economical program either.
You know, I had Frank Hart on the show last week, and we talked about the fact that in Saskatchewan we're quite good at getting our commodities to market, but we often do it to the benefit of the countries we're shipping to, offering them the value add proposition. So they take our product, do the value add, and it turns into an economic benefit for them. Is there room for value add here in Saskatchewan in the potash industry?
There's some room, but it's challenged. So the biggest use of potash is as a fertilizer, and there's three nutrients that make up fertilizer. So when you buy fertilizer for your garden or for your lawn or farmers get it, it's got nitrogen, phosphate, and potash in it. We do produce nitrogen here in the province. We produce urea, and so you got two of the three commodities, nitrogen and potash. The third is phosphate, and that basically comes from North Carolina and Florida. There you got the shipping disadvantage to get it up here and to process and to make it into a mixed fertilizer. And then you got to ship it, you know, back to where the customer is. And Saskatchewan soils are not potassium deprived. I mean, they're actually quite rich. So the customer base is back in the United States or in the offshore market. So it actually would make more economic sense to combine fertilized nutrients in either the U.S. market or in the offshore market. So it's pretty challenging, Evan.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. You know, I'm curious, Wayne, given the job that you've done through the years, you've seen federal governments come and go, provincial governments come and go. We saw a peak frustration with the federal government, and I would say more appropriately, we saw that frustration even inside the Liberal Party with the Prime Minister. What do you say to people today who the dust has settled, we had an election, and there's still this sense of frustration in the West? In fact, we've got some people murmuring and gathering signatures to separate Saskatchewan and Alberta from the rest of Canada. You saw this from the chair of leader in potash industry. What are your thoughts when you hear those types of conversations happening?
Well, I think the basic thing here is that most of Canada is landlocked to a large degree, and especially Alberta and Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and we need to get it to offshore customers. And so it's true in potash, but it's also true in oil and gas. And from my perspective, if we're going to diversify our customer base, that means shipping liquefied natural gas to the Pacific and to the Atlantic into Europe and displacing the product that they get from other sources. And we can do it, mm-hmm. and we can do it fairly cheaply. And I'm happy to see that Quebec's premier seems to be open to a pipeline through Quebec. And I think that if we can get our oil and gas in particular, which is where I think the alienation is coming from, if we can get that to port facilities and use it as an economic engine for the country, it'll make a huge difference and it will reduce our reliance on the United States. So let's see if Carney, I think he seems open to it. Quebec seems open to it. I'm guessing BC does. So I think we have an opportunity right now, and I'm kind of optimistic about that. But we'll have to see.
It's good stuff. Wayne Brownlee, my guest. Before I let you go, I know you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, and you've got a good young team that is building there. But as we watch the Stanley Cup playoffs build towards that final series, your thoughts? Are you behind the Oilers?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'd love to see a Canadian team win the Stanley Cup. It's been some time right now, and I've actually been impressed by the Oilers' dominance over Dallas in the last two games, and so I'm hopeful that that will happen. But we've still got the Florida Panthers, who are completely dominating in the East Conference, yeah. So we'll see how that works. But yeah, so I'm definitely cheering for the Oilers.
And how about your Jays? I know you're a diehard Blue Jays fan. How are they going to be this year?
Oh, it's an ongoing challenge. They win like three in a row and they lose three in a row, and it's just they've got a challenge to put together sustainability to be competitive, but they're not that far out of the race, so I'm an optimistic at the end of the day, and about many things in life, and so I'm optimistic on the Jays as well.
Well, Wayne, we appreciate you giving us some time this morning. Thanks so much for the chat.
Okay, Evan. Take care. Thank you.
You know, great leader in his professional life. Now he's retired, still continues. Volunteer board member, Saskatoon Regional Economic Development Authority, the Saskatoon Public Schools Foundation I mentioned, co-chaired the Thundering Ahead fundraising campaign for Wanuskewin Heritage Park. So appreciation to Wayne, busy guy, volunteers, gives back to community, and happy to have him on the show this morning for a quick chat. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.